Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Next week, the US will hold a virtual summit on the climate crisis, to which it invited 40 world leaders to participate. Malaysia, however, did not make the list. According to the Environment and Water Minister Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man, Malaysia was not invited as we are categorised as a country. We are not categorised as a country vulnerable to climate change. Now, was our exclusion from the US Leaders Summit on Climate as significant as critics claim? So over the next half an hour, we're going to be taking a closer look at our readiness to participate in global climate conversations like the United Nations COP26, which is scheduled for November. Joining us first on the show, we have Lavanya Rama Iyer. She's the Head of Policy and Climate Change for WWF Malaysia. Hello, good evening, Lavanya. Now, what do you make of Malaysia not being invited to the US Leaders Summit on Climate? And do you agree with some quarters who see it as a snub? I mean, this reflecting Malaysia's lack of commitment to addressing the climate crisis. What do you think?
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Sharad. Thanks so much for having WWF on the show today. Now, firstly, I think it is good to see, actually, the Biden administration, the US now under the Biden administration, taking a very different stance on climate change. And hopefully, this will instigate action that we urgently need, which is really the sufficient funding, technology transfer, as well as capacity building of developing countries, so we can achieve development trajectories without repeating the mistakes of the developed world. Now, okay, so with that background, to answer your question, I cannot really speak for the host country, the US, on the reasons behind, you know, who they choose to invite. It's really their prerogative, right? At the end of the day, though, there are many, many conferences on climate. It's become such an important issue. And hosts will seek to engage as they see fit. What is important to note, as some like Meena Raman from Third World Network have already commented on, is that we stay strongly committed and engage in the UN process. And the UN process is the one that is the official channel for global climate action. And what is actually little known is that Malaysia has been leaders in the sphere in the past. For example, during the early days of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the the convention that deals with climate change globally, we had very recognized leaders in climate negotiations, the likes of the former Director General of the Meteorology Department, the late Mr. Chow Kok Kee, was really instrumental in contributing to many things. For example, crafting the Kyoto Protocol. He also helped to pave the way for resolving, you know, a number of impasses in the negotiations at that time. And recognizing all that, he was elected as the chair of some of these very important technical bodies under the convention that guide action and decision-making in the process for global action under the convention. More recently as well, we have had equally illustrious negotiators, for example, Prof. Gurjal Singh, and as leader of this negotiating bloc called the Like-Minded Developing Countries, we were spokesperson for that bloc. We were able to actually help shape the Paris Agreement to be a more balanced one that reflected the principles upon which global climate action could be collectively undertaken.
Yeah, Lavanya, there's the issue of, you know, and you mentioned, I mean, the idea of shared but differentiated responsibility. I think these are very interesting conversations that, you know, the global climate conversation has revolved around. I wonder if you could take us through some of the most significant ones now, especially in terms of things that, you know, struck the Malaysian public as the Minister for Environment and Water suggested. He said, well, you know, we're not a country vulnerable to climate change. Now, the question of vulnerability, how do we deal with that? And it, was it even true to make such a suggestion?
Look, there is actually no country that is spared the impacts of climate change, right? It just varies in terms of the degree to which we experience it. So Malaysia is lucky in that sense because we are not in that category which is so severely impacted. For example, we would not be in the category, same category of vulnerability like the Pacific Island countries, right? Who are at risk of completely disappearing with rising sea levels caused by global warming. So actually, Malaysia has been tracking and reporting on our vulnerability, especially on observed changes in rainfall pattern. I think we have all seen that in our lifetimes. And also reported this periodically in these UN reports called the National Communications. And we've been undertaking these exercises to project future climate impacts, future climate change, and assessing the implications of that to things like our food security for a while now. Mm. So, you know, you can have a look. We have completed three of these reports called the National Communications. They are all freely available online. So the information is there. And furthermore, in our commitment to the Paris Agreement, you know, each country has made a commitment to address climate change under the Paris Agreement. These are called the Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs. In that, Malaysia is amongst the group of countries that not only mentions mitigation action, but also adaptation action, adaptation to the impacts of climate change, recognizing that we're already facing impacts. Okay.
So Lavanya, if I may ask you then, if having said that, are you seeing a certain urgency in Malaysia's policies in the way we've structured our national plans and the programs that we're rolling out? Is the climate crisis being addressed through these different ministries?
Well, I think it's fair to say that over the years, you have seen a progressive, positive shift towards this. You see in the Malaysia plans as well that climate change is being integrated more and more and moving from more of a silo approach embedded, you know, as action in environmental sort of trust to being cross-cutting. And we hope to see that being strongly reflected, I think, in the forthcoming 12th Malaysia plan. And perhaps whilst, you know, some of these policy commitments could have been, you know, stronger in the past, I think the COVID-19 pandemic has actually brought home the stark reality of what the looming climate crisis could entail. So hence, I think it's great actually to see several positive policy developments recently. Particularly, for example, this week we had the meeting of the Malaysian Climate Action Council that was chaired by the Prime Minister. And he announced six new approaches, which includes the development of a green recovery plan from the COVID crisis, and also things like a low mobility plan and other things.
Can I ask you though, you know, Malaysia is often, and our critics, ourselves really, always note that we design great plans. The problem seems to be not in the planning or even conceptualization or even in the fanfare around announcing these great visions, but in the implementation, especially in terms of monitoring and data collection. I mean, is there a gap between the stated commitments and the and ground realities?
Thank you. I mean, that you're right. I think it's very fair to say that that's been the experience in Malaysia. We have, you know, quite beautiful plans. So this is why I think it's interesting. The other thing that happened this week, the ministry in charge, you know, the Ministry of Environment and Water, CASA, they organized a multi-stakeholder meeting, roundtable, and we were also, WWF was also part of the group that organized this. Multi-stakeholder because the realization of all these plans actually needs a whole of society approach. And so it was good that the stakeholder deliberations were instigated at the government level by the ministry. And they had, you know, started discussing, okay, what are the potential pathways towards low emissions development economy? And to that end, I'm also happy to say that WWF Malaysia and Boston Consulting Group, BCG, we are in fact working on an independent study to determine pathways towards what we call a net zero emissions economy. And we hope our findings will provide useful inputs to the larger government efforts. I think now is the time for us to also closely watch, contribute, and ensure that these plans, as you rightly say, which are quite nicely crafted, also get implemented. We don't have time to waste. Yeah.
Can I ask you about Malaysia's role in the global conversation about climate change? Yes, we're not going to the US virtual summit next week, but the one in November, the UN COP26, is going to be one that we want to have a say in. What would you like us to go to be doing, to be thinking about going into COP26? We should probably be going with a little bit of heft and a good report card. So what would you like to see in the next few months?
If we can actually showcase quite a number of things that we are, in a way, doing, right? Sometimes Malaysia, maybe we don't know how to market ourselves very well. Now, I'll give you some examples of some of the more positive trends we are seeing. One is we saw last week possibly the first effort in making the vaccination program a green one. So last week, this green vaccination program was launched. That's a good effort to, you know, mainstream environmental management by integrating it into a very, you know, deep-rooted concern of that touches all Malaysians.
Right.
So I understand that, you know, there's going to be efforts to offset the carbon that arises from the, you know, whole process of vaccination and all that. So in a way, this is a new approach where you bring environmental concerns very much into the heart of, you know, other things which normally would be considered to be separate.
Okay, sorry, we just have a minute left. I want to add this one last question for you, which has got to do with governance and assumptions that the federal government's in complete control of the situation. We've had, over the last 5 years, three governments. And we know now also there's an increasing demand for autonomy, especially from the territories of Sabah and Sarawak. And Sarawak being a huge state with such a powerful impact on the environment, wanting to, in some ways, go its own way. Are you concerned about the question of governance when it comes to these national plans?
Yeah, well, I think governance is definitely of, huge concern, but it's the way you approach it. Now, I think the thing that we need to look at really carefully is how we manage our forests, right? Mm-hmm. So that's always been a subject matter of governance and this kind of regional differences. But I think there are efforts now, for example, to bring finance into it. So the government has been looking at some innovative approaches, for example, the REDD plus financing framework. Have also been in the last budget and previous budgets, the announcement of ecological fiscal transfers to incentivize the keeping of forests by state. And of course, forests are a very important resource for addressing climate change.
Right.
So, in terms of governance, I think these are kind of new tools that we need to employ to make sure that, you know, we are doing the right thing across the board.
Right. Lavanya, thank you so much for speaking with us on the show tonight. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but more in just a couple of minutes. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.